Take RFM Dunedin with you wherever you go, with podcasts and live streaming of Primo local content. Download the Access Internet Radio app for free from Google Play and the Apple App Store.
This programme was first broadcast on RFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
This year, University of Otago celebrates its 150th anniversary, bringing together students, staff, alumni and the wider Dunedin community for a busy programme of events. On Daring to be Wise, we talk with people from all corners of the university community. Inspirational stories from educators, administrators and those whose time at Otago made a lasting impression. Welcome to Daring to be Wise.
Well, my guest today is Associate Professor Jesse Baring, Director of the Centre for Science Communication at Otago. Among many other things, in this year of 150th celebrations, Jesse's pulled together an amazing programme for Science Teller 2019 around a subject that's fascinated us forever, really. What happens to us when we die? For three exciting days, from 12th April to 14th of April, the festival will bring together leading thinkers, researchers and industry professionals working on this intriguing topic. Jesse, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with you before we talk about this wonderful festival. How far back does your association with the University of Otago go?
I've been here since 2014, so about 5 years.
And in the capacity that you're in at the moment?
At the moment, I'm the director of the Center for Science Communication, which is a department in the Division of Sciences, and we do all sorts of interesting things. I think it's a very interdisciplinary department. Our students basically learn how to communicate science to the public in addition to studying the science of science communication.
This whole thing, science communication, this shift that we've seen to take science out of the labs into the homes, into the parks, into the streets – why is popularizing science necessary, important at this time?
I think it's critical at any time, in the sense of, you know, being rationalist, trying to understand the nature of the world. Although, you know, as I think maybe you're alluding to, I think it's absolutely essential at the moment, given the political climate, to know what we're dealing with and not just simply be captives to our own intuitions or popular beliefs in society. We really need to sort of have as clear of an understanding of reality as we can master at this moment in time. And for me, these sort of reflections of reality bear on the big questions, these philosophical questions, including the theme of this year's conference: what happens to us after we die. And it's a scientific perspective on why we believe in the afterlife.
Have we seen this initiative to take science into our communities reflected globally?
I would say that's a fairly safe assumption, although, we still struggle with trying to have reasonable, rational conversations with people who are in positions that influence our everyday lives. Donald Trump is still talking about how just because there's a lot of snow, that means that global warming isn't happening. So clearly there are advances in terms of our sort of scientific conversations that are occurring globally, but we really need to hit those people that are in these positions of such authority.
Locally, we see such initiatives as the Otago Participatory Science Platform, which recognises the resourcing issue around study and science. There's a massive human resource out there that you can tap into in communities, right, which might help with some of those limits on your capacity.
Right. So there are these citizen science initiatives, which you might be referring to, where we basically involve the public in terms of data collection. One of the academic staff members in our department, Nancy Longnecker, has done research for a few years now where she's invited the participation of people in the community taking stock of the variety of birds that are in their back gardens. And keeping track of that and then reporting those data so that this is really this sort of public drive for data acquisition.
Among your students, What are you observing in terms of their attitude and their willingness to step out of the kind of the white lab coat and be effective, engaging communicators?
Well, the type of students that we tend to attract are those that are creatively minded. They have a passion for either filmmaking or writing giving public talks, and they're basically they like that type of interaction with the everyday person and talking about science. They're not necessarily scientists themselves, and that's sort of, you know, they have a passion for science, but they want to do the sort of the practical aspects of the communication without, you know, seeing themselves in a sort of scholarly or academic trajectory. So they love it. I mean, some of our students have gone on to win incredible awards, including Emmy-nominated films and prestigious book prizes. And the uniting factor is that it has to do with science.
Putting aside for a moment this year's particularly interesting theme, how would you describe the aims of a science telefestival in general?
Well, we do this biennially, so it's every 2 years, and there's a revolving theme. So last time we did this was actually in 2015, and the theme of that festival was sex and science, and it was all about scientific approaches to human sexuality. 2017, we actually skipped because we had another major conference happening on campus. But this time, we're going back to the event with Science Teller, Science in the Afterlife. And the object is really to get people talking about an evocative, controversial topic within the field of science. It's a sort of no-holds-barred conversation about issues that affect all of us. So we really try to, in terms of like searching for a theme, we really try to find a topic that will resonate with as broad a demographic as possible. And I think, you know, the subject of the afterlife certainly does that.
How did you strike upon that theme?
Well, I guess it's a bit selfish from my perspective. This is my area of research. I've been doing research in the field of psychology. I'm trained as a psychologist originally, and the subject goes all the way back to my PhD dissertation, which was about how do children think about the afterlife. And you know, what underlies it basically is looking at the cognitive ingredients that allow us to envision the continuity of consciousness after death. Is this something that is specific or unique to human beings, for instance? Is there an evolutionary function to thinking that we survive biological death? Is this a glitch in the system in terms of our cognitive capabilities, just not being able to simulate or imagine the absence of consciousness? Or is there really such a thing as life after death? You know, these are just questions that I think you know, will strike a lot of people as being, you know, central to their experiences, maybe even at the moment.
There'd be some whose immediate first response to hearing a theme like that is that there's no science in discussions of the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Well, that depends on the perspective that you take. One is if you're a materialist and you believe that the brain is responsible for generating consciousness, and in the absence of a functioning brain, you simply can't have any type of subjective experience. How do we see anything if our brains are in the ground and our eyes are in the ground decomposing? How do we actually see things in heaven or recognize our loved ones smiling at us and so forth? So there's a tension there in terms of our intuitions about what we feel like it's going to be like and our rationality, which is our understanding of the biological principles surrounding death. So in that sense, yeah, it's not really a scientific conversation. It's sort of a non-starter. When you're dead, and you can't possibly have any type of conscious experience. On the other hand, there are certainly investigators in this area. I guess they would call themselves paranormal psychologists who believe that there is evidence, maybe indirect evidence and maybe not replicable evidence, but evidence nonetheless that there is conscious experience after death. Before I came to Otago, I was writing a piece for Aeon magazine, and I went to the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, which has the last remaining paranormal psychology research lab associated with any university in the entire world. They're still active. But the founding of that place was absolutely interesting and incredible to me. It was founded by a guy named Ian Stevenson, who was a very reputable psychiatrist back in the 60s, very traditional, hard-nosed scientific researcher who wrote textbooks in psychiatry. But then when he was in his late 40s, early 50s, he completely shifted gears to the study of the afterlife, and he was particularly interested in the phenomenon of reincarnation. He believed that sometimes children before the age of about 4 or 5 would spontaneously start retelling or recalling their experiences from their previous life, and they would sometimes give very idiosyncratic, detailed information to the interrogator about what that was like. You know, they would give names and descriptions of the backyard and all sorts of things like that. He even did comparisons of their stories, these little kids' stories, with the autopsy records of the person that they believe they were reincarnated from. And sometimes, for instance, you would find some congenital abnormality, like they were born with a very rare a condition where they were missing a couple of fingers or something like that, and then you find out that that person actually had a chainsaw accident right before he died. It depends on how much stock you put into those accounts, but you know, some would say that that constitutes data. Will it satisfy most traditional empirical researchers? Probably not, but it does. I do think it gives us something to think about.
There are going to be so many interesting discussions during this festival, for sure. How do you go about starting to put the program together? Who do you reach out to involve?
Because I've been involved in this field of research for quite some time, I kind of know who the key players are, I guess, in terms of doing the most fascinating research, at least from my perspective. And I'm working on this, I should say, with my psychologist colleague, Jamin Halberstadt, in the Department of Psychology here at the University of Otago. And we're still doing research here in our labs at Otago on people's beliefs about the afterlife, all sorts of fascinating sort of laboratory manipulations. I started off with some of the bigger names in the popularization of these conversations. So Mary Roach, for instance, is an incredibly gifted writer and humorist, probably one of the most well-known, if not the most well-known, science writer in contemporary times. And she's written a variety of books, but one of them happens to be about this pursuit of what happens to us after we die. She wrote this book called Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife. So she's going to be giving the keynote talk for Science Teller on the 12th of April, sort of launching the entire event. And she'll be loads of fun, I think. Then I brought in Michael Shermer, who is the president of the American Skeptic Association, and also the publisher of Skeptic magazine. And he has written many books that touch on this subject of people's belief in the afterlife, mostly from this obviously a skeptical sort of debunking perspective. And he's made a career out of sort of shedding a bright light on the tricks that the human mind plays on us, but also charlatans and mediums and those types of things, and trying to reveal the tricks of the trade. So he'll be talking about his most recent book, which is Heavens on Earth, which talks quite a bit about people's belief in the afterlife as well. And he'll also be engaged in a debate, and the topic of the debate is there life after death? He's the skeptic. He's going to be saying, no, it's not. This is a psychological illusion. This is an artifact of human cognition. When the brain stops working, we have no phenomenological experience whatsoever. The lights go out. That's not even true. There are no lights. There's no such thing as darkness. If you use put a nest at the end of anything, it gives sort of the sense that we're perceiving something. It's just non-there. He'll be debating this topic with another friend of mine, Justin Barrett, who is a cognitive scientist of religion that actually does believe that there is life after death and that there is a God. And his argument basically is that the human mind was designed by God to think in these ways. He might not say with absolute certainty that there is an afterlife, but he certainly wouldn't rule it out like Michael Shermer would. well, this is me putting my thoughts into their mouths in terms of what they're going to be arguing, but that's my impression of their stances. And then, you know, we've got a variety of speakers that are not popular science writers or communicators, but they are doing incredibly fascinating research in this field. Virginia Slaughter, which is not an unfortunate name, but an ironic name, I guess, given this topic. But she'll be speaking about her really clever research program on children's developing understanding of death. Deborah Kellerman, coming from Boston University, she's done some amazing work. She'll be speaking about how we think about life before birth, which is sort of the antithesis of life after death. And do we sort of represent or think about that state of being the same way? And if not, why not? And so on. A former student of mine from Belfast, Claire White, will be joining us from California State University, and she'll be telling us about her research on mortuary rituals and how there's cross-cultural recurrence of different traditions about how we dispose of bodies, and is there sort of an evolutionary rationale to our caretaking of corpses. So all sorts of interesting topics.
You're going to be a very happy man. This is right in your field.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to have the best
really
people
about it, yeah.
In the land, across the globe here to talk about it. You talked about kind of the nature of these things as presentations. In that regard, how much movement is there between your panelists, your presenters, and those who are attending the festival?
Hopefully quite a lot. I mean, one of the things that I really want this event to be is accessible and fun and not just sort of this boring, dry academic conference. So the speakers that I've invited, I've instructed them to give, you know, for lack of a better description, TED-like talks where it's engaging, it's provocative, there's going to be questions and answers. Actually, on our website, if you go to scienceteller.com, it'll actually redirect you to our university site. You can submit your ghost story. And, you know, the most convincing ghost story, we're going to be giving a prize of books by our authors and personally inscribed copies of these books. It doesn't even have to be the people that are attending the conference. It can be anybody in the world that wants to submit a ghost story for a very difficult panel of judges to determine whether there's any validity to the claims.
So who should attend this festival?
Well, everybody, of course. But I think anybody who has grappled with or thought about what happens to us when we die would get a lot out of this, to be honest. I think whether you are a believer or a skeptic, a hard-nosed materialist, an atheist, a religious person, it doesn't matter. I think that the information that will be on display at this 3-day event will be certainly relevant to anybody who has known somebody who has died or will die themselves. So I guess, yeah, really, it should be everybody.
The nature,
of course, I'm immortal, so I
yes, indeed. Now, the nature of festivals, of conferences, is that there's a lot of juice that ain't on the official program.
Yeah.
Whether it's something that happens over a cup of coffee at lunchtime or over something else in the evening, mm-hmm. your hope is that this will bring people together for those kind of engagements as well.
Yeah, I think this is really we're trying to start a movement toward at the University of Otago that deals with these big hot button topics like the afterlife, like sex. You know, the Science Teller, it's all about trying to get people engaged and having lively, animated conversations and disagreeing and being passionate about their thoughts, but also being tethered to the most contemporary, up-to-date scientific understanding that we have of these matters before just simply talking. So, yeah, there will be, in terms of just our panel of speakers, there's going to be, I think, a lineup of about 12, and it's a 3-day event, and they're coming from the United States mostly. So, yeah, we've got a whole lineup for them too. Many of them have never been to New Zealand, let alone Dunedin. I think that they're really looking forward to speaking and participating at an event in this part of the world.
When it's all over, you'll no doubt have to wash it all up with a bit of paperwork as well, Jesse. Talking about outcomes and things like that,
I hate bureaucracy, but yes, you're right.
Well, in terms though of what you would hope mm-hmm. would come out of this and where it might go, what about that?
I want to get some new ideas personally. I want to find out what my colleagues in this area are up to at the moment. I can see this easily turning into an edited volume or something like that, or maybe even a series of articles for popular science magazines about sort of, really, this is a horrible expression, but having our fingers on the pulse of the study of the afterlife, that's really bad. really sort of using this event to showcase the most interesting, groundbreaking, innovative research designs and studies and thinking in this area. And like I said, that could translate to magazine articles, an edited book volume, maybe a documentary series. We've got a filmmaking program at the Center for Science Communication. We don't want it to die. Again, a really bad expression. We don't want it to die just, right after the event. We want this to keep going.
I've been speaking with Associate Professor Jesse Bering, Director of the Center for Science Communication at Otago, about Science Teller 2019 on from the 12th to the 14th of April. Just put Science Teller 2019 into a search engine. It'll bring up links to the relative information about the festival and the program. Just finally, Jesse, this is part of the official program for University of Otago 150th celebration. Mm-hmm. Just how do you feel about that in terms of how that sits with the centre and this year of celebration?
Well, I think it's a pretty cool connection. One of the things that I've been trying to connect the dots with is the history of the University of Otago. There are certainly a lot of ghost stories around campus. To be honest, I'm not sure the university wants me to be advertising which places are presumably haunted and that sort of thing. New students are coming in, after all. But I think it's kind of interesting to think about the rich history of Dunedin and all the people that have passed through the halls of the university over the years, and these complex personalities that are no longer with us, and their spirits will be. Well, I don't know if I can actually say that, but their spirits will be with us, I think. I don't believe that literally, but you know what I mean. I thought my puns were bad when we were talking about sex and science for the last event.
Jesse, it's been great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us here. And
I add one more thing?
Yes, absolutely.
Which is that there will be a screening of the hit TV series Wellington Paranormal, an episode from that series with the producer sticking around afterward to answer some questions about how they present this sort of mockumentary series about the paranormal on TV.
Fantastic stuff. Just proving science can be fun. Thanks for joining us, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Daring to be Wise, celebrating 150 years of the University of Otago. You'll find podcasts of all episodes from this series online at oar.org.nz. To find out more about the University of Otago's 150th anniversary celebrations, visit otago.ac.nz/150.
Take ORFM Dunedin with you wherever you go, with podcasts and live streaming of Primo local content. Download the Access Internet Radio app for free from Google Play and the Apple App Store.
This program was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.